Welcome to the Context Matters podcast. I am your host, Cindy Parker. I like to gather around the table with a wide variety of people who have very different life experiences from mine, and we get to talk about God, Bible, theology, and other tangentially related subjects. Your voice is always welcome around this table. You can reach out to me through my Narrative of Place website. Last week, we heard a masterclass in hermeneutics as we talked about the multiplicity of meaning in the text and the need to recognize our own presuppositions when approaching the text. And we will continue that thread today, but not with international voices, but with the view of reading the Bible with children. My guest today on the podcast is Rachel Wilkowski. She has worked and volunteered with kids ministry at local churches in the Vancouver, Canada region. She is also finishing a PhD about children's Bibles through Trinity College, Dublin. She and I have a shared love for the geographical setting of the biblical text. But while I've never really thought about the theology included and excluded in children's Bibles, she is paying keen attention. And the more I chat with her, the more fascinated I become with the process of reading the Bible with children. And just a quick heads up, there was something really strange with our Wi-Fi connection that influenced her audio. I didn't catch it until editing this episode, so I am going to do a little summarizing to fill in the gaps. Rachel grew up in the church and has vivid memories of Christmas and Easter celebrations. But in high school, she wouldn't really call herself a Christian. Like many of us, she questioned her faith. But as she put it, the Bible was irresistible, the place she kept going back to explore the people, the land, and history. Now she is working on her PhD. But all along her academic career, she has been in ministry working with a wide range of ages. I asked her what it was that made her interested in focusing specifically on children's literature and children's Bibles. Lean in and enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, there's two reasons. One of them is more experiential on my part, and then the other one is sort of pragmatic. But I remember sitting in a class on Judges. This was my first ever master's level course that I took, the course on Judges.
You took it on Judges? That's like such a fun surprise, the way to rock your world and view of the Bible.
Absolutely. I was really grumpy, actually, that I had picked this course. There were other ones that I was more keen on, but that was the week that I was able to take study leave that summer. And that was kind of the course, the only one that seemed like vaguely interesting to me. So I'm like, okay, fine, I guess I'll take it. Now, Judges is my favorite book of the Bible. Obviously, I loved the course. But one of the things that stood out to me in the course was that the professor would take us through different lenses through which we read Judges. So now we're going to read Judges through a literary lens. If we look at it as literature, you have this downward spiral of Judges and Samson's at the bottom. If we read it as history, what's it telling us? These things happened in these places to certain people, and there's culturally valuable information that helps us better understand why the people in this story are making the choices that they're making. And even what it says about God, where is God speaking? Where is he silent in the choices that the people are making relative to their culture? And then he took us through theological reading. Again, where is God in this story? What's he affirming? What's he not affirming? What's his tone? If we can tell that, what's the big sort of theological message that's being communicated in this book? Then we put those all together. When you do that, Samson, it's still debated in the academy, but largely when you're looking through those lenses, Samson isn't the hero anymore. Samson is like, okay, nobody in Israel was cared to do what Yahweh had commanded, had forgotten the law, had forgotten being God's people. Samson just sort of happened, in quotes, to do some things that sort of defeated the enemies of Yahweh, but not in a complete way. So he started to free them from their enemies. And I could talk more about Judges forever, but that's yes. sufficient for the point. And the point is that I grew up in Sunday school thinking that Samson is a hero of the faith, delivered Israel from God's enemies. And now I had this different reading. And I came out of that class wondering, why wasn't I taught to read the Bible in these ways as a kid? And that question percolated in my mind for 3 to 4 years. And then when it came time to write my comprehensive paper for my master's degree, that was the direction that I ended up taking. Why do children's Bibles interpret in the ways that they interpret? What interpretive lenses are they using? And why are they using them? Why is there so much interpretation that is being embedded in many children's Bibles? Why aren't children invited into the interpretive process more? So that's the, we can go all kinds of directions from there. That's the experiential reason that I ended up working with children's Bible and interpretation academically. And on the other side, pragmatically, sort of, there's a real gap in the academy. Children's Bibles are discussed by a handful of scholars, but there hasn't been a lot of attention paid to them until about the 1980s. And even then, it's not very widespread attention. And I wonder if children and children's Bibles have been and are sort of seen as not legitimate objects for academic study. Because they're for children. And we're grown-ups. And so we're going to analyze the Bible in grown-up ways, in adult ways.
Right.
But I think that there's a lot to be gained from close reading of the interpretive choices that are made in children's Bibles, not only to understand what's being communicated to children, but I think that it really helps us read the Bible more closely. Where are the interpretive ideas coming from that are embedded in children's Bible? Are we being led by our confessional tradition? Are we being led by personal preferences here? Why do we feel the need add all of these interpretive layers? Why don't we invite children more into the interpretive process? Is it fear? Is it protectiveness? Is it concern about orthodoxy? Is it our own sense of the Bible as a closed narrative, by which I mean one that we're told what to think, but we're not invited to engage in the gaps that are in the different stories in a dynamic way? We're not invited to speculate. I obviously don't land there. I think that we are invited to speculate and to engage in dynamic ways in the things that we're not told, and even the things that we are told. Why does it say this here? And those seem to be opposite things. What could be going on there? And it's not only a comfort with narratives, violent or sexual narratives question, but I think it's a genre question also. So if you look in a children's Bible, you'll see that it's mostly narrative. There's not very much apocalyptic in there. There's not very much wisdom literature, prophetic literature, and there's not very many of Paul's epistles are included. Or if they're included, they're included in a narrative format and not an epistolary format. Oh,
that is fascinating.
What children are being taught is that the Bible is a narrative, is an overarching narrative. But I wonder if that too much communicates. And this is just something that I wonder. I haven't, fully landed at the question. If we are teaching kids that the Bible is a book that you read like any other book, the Bible isn't a novel. It's made up of all these different genres that are working together in different ways to communicate the same thing, to tell us about God and who he's like and how he interacts in the world and the human experience, so that to help us know him better, which I think is amazing. It's amazing that God communicates in all of these different ways, but we lose that when we're emphasizing just narrative for kids. And the other drawback of that is that when they grow up, not only have we not helped them read Hebrew narrative well, which does have its own reading flavor and techniques, but we also haven't introduced them to other genres that have their own techniques of reading that are communicating things that are in very specific ways that are foreign to us.
Listening to you talk, and I never put together again because I just don't pay attention to children's Bibles, although now I'm fascinated and want to pull a whole bunch of them off the shelf. But listening to even the fact that we are portraying the Bible as a singular genre without all these other kinds of genres in and of itself is muting the power of the Bible. Because when we talk about God speaking in our language, not just English, Hebrew, Greek, but language, like some people have a mathematical brain and they need God to speak to them in math. And some people have an artistic brain and God needs to speak to them through paint or through music. And all these different ways that we humans think, all these different genres in the Bible are doing that. Mm-hmm. Do you think in a visionary way? Well, apocalyptic literature is your genre. Like that is just.
Exactly.
You know, it's like the ultimate sci-fi rooted in reality, kind of a genre. And that makes me really sad hearing you say we've simplified everything down to narrative, but it also then is teaching kids that there's a moral point to every story and the story is very short. And so we're not even teaching them how to read a long story. It's like some little tiny thing happens and there's so much focus on just the answer of what it means. That we're losing our ability to go, how many more questions can we ask about this? And can we hold on to one idea and come back to it and visit it next week?
Yeah. I think the good news is that they're slowly starting to be a shift away from both of those emphases, both the emphasis on moralism. There's a singular message to each story, and it's very discreet and clear what it is, and the emphasis on solely narrative. And there is starting to be a little bit more of a shift away from moralism. Sometimes that can land on Christology as the singular message. It's helpful in that, the Bible points us to Jesus, but the Hebrew Bible in particular was read and is read apart from Jesus and still tells us something about God. And so we have to hold those two things in tension. So I'm a big fan of multi-locality in children's Bibles. What I mean by that is that each story speaks with many voices. It means just the story of Noah, a story about salvation. Is it a story about obedience? Is it a story about judgment? The answer is yes to all of those. But your children's Bibles will often emphasize one over the other. That's what I mean by multivocality is reading different retellings of the same story to hear the different voices with which it speaks. To hear that it's a story about salvation, but also to hear that it's a story about judgment, but also to hear that it's a story about grace, but also to hear that it's a story about obedience. Children's Bibles and their tendency to focus on the single meaning of a story are helpful because they highlight that meaning. They're unhelpful in that they push aside all of the other meanings. And so that's why I think I tend to, when people ask me, what's your favorite children's Bible, which they ask me all the time, and then like, that's a non-sensical question a little bit. There's no perfect children's Bible. I think we just have to accept that's the reality. Is that you can't have a perfect children's Bible. What you can have is these many voices speaking to the many meanings that are embedded in a single story, drawing those out and inviting dynamic conversation. And I think that can be the value of children's Bibles.
As we talked, Rachel told me how often children's Bibles go from Moses directly to David, skipping all the important developments in between, which always makes me think about what kind of effect this has on biblical literacy in adults. Do they go back and fill in the gaps? Rachel noted that there is much to be encouraged by these days. There is a movement of publication in children's Bibles that include the more complex narratives. And then the two of us spent time trying to figure out how to teach these narratives to kids, because all of us are so far removed from the time and place of that literature. So take the story of Judah and Tamar, for example. Tamar is listed in the genealogy of Jesus. So she should be someone whose story we tell, right? But there are adult themes all over the place in her story in Genesis. So at what point can you share these stories with kids? I don't know enough developmental psychology to answer these questions, but I'm curious. I do think, however, that we underestimate how much kids can grapple with. I have a dear friend from seminary, and she would take notes in class and then go to her junior high Bible class and teach them what we just learned. And they got it. They were okay with ambiguity and mystery and with asking questions. So I asked Rachel if she is noticing this as well.
Well, this is the thing, is that kids don't have the hang-ups that we have. They aren't fussed, as you say, about miracles and whether this was an act of triumph or an act of God or both, and if so, how do they fit together? They're not, at least the kids that I worked with, again, they're under 10, but at that point, they're not fussed about it. Now, I do want them to be prepared to engage questions at some point. But I also want to let them be in the space that they're in, the space where, like, they don't mind ambiguity. And when they do start to mind ambiguity, if I've done well to make space before that for their questions, they'll be able to bring that question to the text when it does start to come up for them. Or when they do start to ask about the miraculous and how is this possible, but I didn't think this could happen, et cetera. So I think of that in terms of the phrase word that I use in my head is scaffolding. And so what I want to do is to build something when they're little that retains space for them to add on to when they're big, that retains space for them to embrace ambiguity as a child and then to, as they get older, ask, gives them permission to inquire out of the text and of their previous experience of the text and to say, wait a second. This thing that I was comfortable with, I'm not so comfortable with this anymore. Can we go back to it and revisit it as my scaffolding is rising in a sense? So that's why I think about children's experience of the Bible like that. I want to create things that they can build on. And part of that is giving them dynamic space with the text. Part of helping kids experience the Bible, I think, is knowing the child. So for example, I have some kids in our kid ministry that are not at all fussed about the violence. And I have some that are very bothered by the violence. How can this be in the Bible? I'm uncomfortable with it. I don't like it. And I don't, for that child, I don't want that to drive them away from God. Now that's tricky when you're in a children's ministry and there's like 20 kids in the room. How are you going to do that? But part of that, I think, is the purpose of children's ministry. And I insist on not calling it Sunday school anywhere I go, because it's not just about information transfer. It's about, part of it is I need to know the kids, or the children's ministry team needs to know the kids and know how they're interacting with God through the Bible and where those questions are coming and where those fears are coming. And that involves interacting with a child, but also interacting with the parents, because sometimes it's a parent who's coming and telling me this child is bored, or this child is worried about this, or that's a question that came up for us. And so it does end up being a really collaborative space to help, to know our kids, to help them know God better through the Bible.
As you have been reading the Bible with kids for so many years, kids and young adults, but kids in particular, how has it changed the way you read the Bible, your own personal view of the biblical text because you have kids who are right alongside you as you're doing it?
A few different ways to answer that question, depending on whether I'm reading the Bible or a children's Bible. So I'm the one that stands out in my mind most recently is reading the children's Bible with my nephews. We always do that before bed. And lately we've started to have more questions about why was this person stoned again? Because we were reading a story in the New Testament where somebody, I think the stoning of Stephen, maybe we read that one recently. Why did they throw rock at the tomb? That wasn't nice. So just reading, I just kind of love hearing their questions. I think it gives permission for us to ask our own questions sometimes and reminds us that sometimes the obvious question is a good question to ask. But it makes me read slower and it makes me read closer and it makes me ask questions both for myself, but also for the sake of the ones that I'm reading the Bible with, the kids at church, my niece and nephews. I think that's one of the ways that it's affected my Bible reading.
Ah, nice. It makes me want to throw out a challenge to listeners of the podcast to go read a story that's in a children's Bible and then go read the biblical story.
Yes.
And just see, are all the characters represented? Which ones are there? Which ones are missing? Which ones are added to the biblical, to the children's Bible that maybe are not actually there in the actual text itself? What an interesting and fascinating exercise that would be.
That is one of my favorite things to do. I love doing that because it really helps you see things in the Bible that you might not notice otherwise.
Yeah.
So yes, listeners, please do that. And report back to us what you notice.
I am so curious if you've paid attention to what is in or what is left out of children's Bibles. Have you seen how it influences how teenagers engage the Bible? Have you ever compared a story in a children's Bible to the story in the adult Bibles? Next week on the podcast, we are going to talk to two authors of children's literature who noticed that the context of the Bible is not taught to kids, and so they are working to fix that. I have to give a huge whopping thank you to people like Carrie and Scott Jenkins and Linda Overall. They are part of my Patreon team who donate different amounts of money, but they are allowing this podcast to remain ad-free for all of you. They are the sustaining force, and I am so grateful for their partnership. I produced this episode. Luke Bronner of Milieu Media Group did the edits and the final mix. And Peter Lordson of Sycamore Sound created the music. I am already looking forward to our conversation next week. Until then, take a moment, look through a children's Bible, and stay curious about the world around you.